So we're going to be looking at the parable of the Good Samaritan today, and I just want to start by asking, how many people have heard about this parable before? But probably better to say, has anybody here ever not heard of the parable of the Good Samaritan? Nobody. Okay, you'd think that would be an advantage, but I don't think it is, and I'll get to that in a minute. But before I start that, I just want to share my favorite painting of the Good Samaritan. This is by an artist named Daniel Bunnell, and I just want to show you that because I like it. So I'm going to dig right into the text. This is from Luke 10. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You've answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him, and he bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have had.' Which of these 3 do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." I'm going to pray. Lord, help us to see ourselves in this story that you told. Help us to be realistic about what it means to be a good neighbor and to reach out even when it's hard, even when we're afraid, and even when it costs us something. Amen. So we're on the 6th week of our parable series, and I've started to notice, I don't know if you have, but I've started to notice some real common themes. A lot of Jesus' parables are actually pretty similar. They're a way of speaking that are pretty confrontational, but in a direct way, indirect way, and in a concrete way. So it's real easy to argue with sort of a statement of belief, right? Especially if it's a statement of belief that seems odd or doesn't fit with what you expect, but it's real hard to argue with a story, right? And also, this was very dangerous speech for Jesus. He used parables more and more towards the end of his ministry, and it was kind of a way for him to speak some difficult truths in ways that would postpone him getting arrested and killed until the time was right. So it's real, real challenging speech. Another common feature of the parables is they tend to turn upside down all our expectations. And so whatever you think you know, Jesus is probably going to surprise you. This is especially true. Okay, so the story of the Good Samaritan isn't an exception. And this quality of upside down in these stories that Jesus tells should make us real suspicious when we think we already know what he's going to say or what he means. So be prepared to be surprised. If you're really reading it, you should be surprised. And this is especially true, you should be especially suspicious when you are identifying yourself with sort of the heroes, the holy ones, the stars, you know, the righteous, the special ones. So I want us to remain open today, even though all of us have heard this story a million times and we think we know it. I want us to be open to be challenged by it. So this parable was told in response to a question that's real similar to something that we talked about a few weeks ago. Remember when I talked about the rich young ruler who came to Jesus and he said, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" So this guy's doing the exact same thing, and he basically gets the exact same answer from Jesus. Love God and love your neighbor as yourself. I wonder how many people asked Jesus that question and how often he had to repeat that. Love God, love your neighbor as yourself. Real simple. Really not very simple, but real easy to say. But both of these men, the rich young ruler and this legal expert, ask follow-up questions that are sort of intended to justify themselves. They want to walk away satisfied and content and feeling pretty good about themselves. They want to walk away comfortable. And Jesus deprives both of them of this in kind of the same way. They were both disappointed by what they got when they asked that follow-up question. So here the expert in law wants to know, well, who is my neighbor? And he's not asking that question because he actually wants the answer. He thinks he already knows the answer, right? Jews in this time really would have had some disagreements about it, but all of them would have agreed that your neighbor is your fellow Jew, right? That's who it is. You might have had some disagreements about, well, is it my immediate neighbors? Is it my village? Is it my country? Is it any Jew anywhere? You know, but all of them would have agreed your neighbor is Jewish. Never in a million years would any of them imagined that a Samaritan would be considered their neighbor. And they would have never imagined under any circumstances that a Samaritan would be a hero in a story. Most of you know this, but I'll say a little bit about it. The animosity between the Jews and the Samaritans was really big. And it's centered mostly around where it was proper to worship. In fact, they were kind of in this ongoing fight over who were the legitimate Israelites. They were fighting over that a lot. Samaritans thought they were, Jews thought they were. They worshipped in different places, and there was a lot of animosity. And it wasn't just limited to sort of name-calling and I don't like you very much kinds of stuff. So the Jews actually destroyed the Samaritan temple, which would be troubling to a Samaritan, I would imagine. And at one point, the Samaritans desecrated the Jewish temple during Passover by scattering human bones. So they were both kind of doing these not so great things to antagonize one another. And so the road that Jesus is talking about in this parable is called the Jericho Road, and it's about 30 miles. You had to go directly through Samaria to get to it, at least the most direct route. So like if you were in Galilee and you wanted to go to Jerusalem, you would pass through Samaria. And there were Jews that would actually travel 30 miles out of their way to avoid that, which is pretty significant when you figure, you know, they didn't have cars and most of them actually were on foot. So that's a pretty significant thing. But I want you to hold on to that information for a minute and I'll get back to it in a little bit. I want to return to this thought that this parable, as with most other parables, kind of turns our expectations upside down. And to get at that, I want to ask you a question. Just shout out if you think you know the answer. Who are the villains and who is the hero in this parable?
Samaritan's the hero.
Robbers. Robbers are villains. Who else? Priest and the Levite, right? That's what we've come to know about this parable. We're all really familiar with that. And that's, it might surprise you, but I think that that's kind of problematic. And this is why. It's not exactly that that's wrong. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong exactly. But when this parable is meant to have a punchline, right? And the punchline and the impact of the parable completely depends on you identifying with the priest and the Levite. You don't get the same impact from the parable if you're already identifying with the Samaritan. Punchlines are like that. The reason they're effective, if you're telling a joke to somebody, it's not a very good joke if people know where you're going with it, right? Like the brilliance of a really good joke is that you're going this way. Oh my gosh, I didn't see that coming. And that's exactly the kind of impact that this parable had to its original listeners. They didn't think of the priest and the Levite as the villains or the bad guys in the story, right? They respected them, they identified them, they were fellow Jews. And they would have had a lot of respect for them. So in order to kind of soften you a little bit and kind of get you in the place where you can imagine yourself as this priest and this Levite, I want to explore how they're a lot like us. So I talked about the Jericho Road. This is what it looks like. So most of Jesus' ministry was around Galilee. He traveled a few times on this Jericho Road. But you'd have to go down through Samaria to get to Jerusalem. You can't really read it there, but Jerusalem's right by Bethlehem, and it's down by where it says Judea. It was a really, really dangerous road, you guys. It was terrible terrain. There were all these caves that pockmarked the road, and robbers would hide in them and attack people. And in addition to that, there were wild animals that would attack people. So there was lions and bears. No tigers, but still, oh my. it was a scary place to be. And I think it gets us a little bit more in the place of where we're supposed to be if we think of this priest and this Levite as being afraid. They were scared. They were taking this really risky route, probably to go to the temple and perform duties for the temple. And MLK talked about this in his, this was actually the last sermon he gave before he died. He talked about this road. So he said, as soon as we got on that road, I said to my wife, I can see why Jesus used this setting as in his parable. It's a winding, meandering road. In the days of Jesus, it came to be known as the Bloody Pass. And you know, it's possible that the priest and the Levite looked over that man on the ground and wondered if the robbers were still around. Or it's possible that they felt that the man on the ground was merely faking, and he was acting like he'd been robbed and hurt in order to seize them over there, lure them there for quick and easy seizure. And so, the first question that the priest asked, the first question that the Levite asked, was, if I stop to help this man, what will happen to me? What will happen to me? I think that's a question that all of us can relate to, right? If you're in a scary place, if you're fearful for yourself, it's hard to reach out and help. And so MLK kind of understood this, that this wasn't a simple case of these selfish, evil people ignoring someone in need. It may have been, but you can imagine that it might not have been. This was a risky place, they were in danger, and it takes a lot of courage to reach out in those situations. In addition to that, you really don't know what it means to reach out and help somebody. You don't know what's going to happen. And the truth is, sometimes it doesn't turn out the way you intend. Sometimes it's really messy and it's painful to help people. So it's really important that you understand that the priest and the Levite is us. That's who we are in this story. They're the people we respect. They're people doing their best to serve God. They're caught up in their everyday lives in ways that are both admirable and selfish. They were probably, as I said, on their way to temple, possibly didn't want to defile themselves. So they're really neither heroes nor villains in this story. That's thinking of it way too simplistically. And they're in the story for this express purpose. It was to get his listener, that legal expert, to identify with them first, and then to examine his own heart. So keep that in mind. In this story, you're the priest and the Levite passing the person in need out of fear or self-interest. And this parable is meant to confront those things in you, and we all have those things. Okay. I noticed something as I was reading this. Jesus had just passed through this road before he told this parable. He just had just gotten off this road. And I wanted to read, kind of back up and read you the verses that talk about that. So in Luke 9, so the previous chapter, as the time approached for him to be taken up to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. So he's in the Galilee area, he went to Jerusalem. And he sent messengers on ahead who went into a Samaritan village, because it's on the way, to get things ready for him. But the people there did not welcome him because he was heading for Jerusalem. When the disciples, James and John, saw this, they asked, "Lord, do you want us to call fire down from heaven and destroy them?" But Jesus turned and rebuked them. So, you know, when the Samaritans acted the way the disciples expected them to act, they were real ready to go nuclear on them, right? They wouldn't have had any problem with that. It sounds like they were a little bit anxious to do that. And Jesus not only doesn't go along with that plan, but he sort of harshly corrects them. And then he reaches this town, he reaches Jerusalem, and he starts telling this parable where the Samaritan is the hero. No one would have expected that, including his disciples, right? They would have all been surprised by that, shocked, bugged. But Jesus did that real deliberately, and I think he did it for at least two reasons that we should pay attention to. The first reason is that he was sort of breaking into the ways that we tend to judge each other. So we tend to judge each other when people are like us, they're the heroes. When people are different from us, they're wrong, they're the villain, that kind of thing. So he was coming against that kind of mindset. He was bringing a kingdom to earth where there's really no distinction between Samaritan and Jew. In God's kingdom, there really is no other, right? There's just us. And the second reason was that he was telling this story so that he could move his listeners from the place they were identifying, so as sort of national Jews, to this person that was so different from them but was behaving in a way where they were included, where they were a part of the keeping the law. He kind of wanted them to aspire to be like a Samaritan, this particular Samaritan. So in this story, you're not just the priest and the Levite, you're also the Samaritan. And then, as Mark pointed out, which I didn't share this with him, but there's also another character in this story. There's the victim, and he's laying naked and half dead. And it's real significant, you guys, that he was naked, because there was no way to tell where he came from. If you would have seen him there, you wouldn't have been able to tell, was he a Jew, was he a Samaritan, was he a Roman, there, some other nationality. There was really no way of telling that. And the people in the story wouldn't have known that either. All that's apparent is that he's helpless, and he needs somebody to give him a hand. And now, if you had ever traveled on that road, and almost everybody had, you would have been able to identify with that guy. Because I'm imagining if I'm traveling a road like that, I'm worried that I'm going to end up like him. And I'm hoping if I do end up like him, somebody helps. So Jesus is including this character because he wants us to identify with him. And I think that's so important, too. The beauty in community of actually receiving help. I think Christians tend to sort of see one another as like, oh, especially when we hear a parable like this, like, oh, we're supposed to help people, we're supposed to help people, we're supposed to help people. But it's not very dignifying to always be the person who needs help. And so it can be a beautiful thing to receive help when you need it and to be real about that. Okay, so when Jesus asked that legal expert who was the neighbor to the man who fell in the hands of the robber, he Chris pointed this out when we were talking about it. The real answer is they all were. They all were his neighbor. It's just that some of them weren't acting like it. And he was their neighbor. That man who was the victim was also their neighbor. So I want you to see yourself like, and do this with all the parables. Put yourself in all the different places in these parables and see yourself there and see what you learn from walking in the shoes of that character. But I'm going to tell you the truth, because I think when we talk about helping people, we do it in ways that aren't really true to what's going on most of the time. The truth is, being a good neighbor can be really messy, it can be really complicated, doesn't always work out the way we hope. It can be risky. Getting involved in people's lives can be really, really costly, and sometimes it can even harm you. And God asks us to do it anyway. So how many of you have heard of Dirk Willems? Okay, Chris talked about this a while ago, but I'll refresh your memory. Chris is Dirk. This isn't Chris. But this Dirk is the guy helping the guy out of the ice. So he's probably the most famous Anabaptist martyr. And what happened to him is he got baptized as an adult, started baptizing other adults. This made him an enemy of the Catholic Church, and they put him in this castle that was converted to a prison and had this moat around it. So they starved him, they tortured him. After a while, he tied together some rags and he escaped and started running across this moat. And the guards were running after him, and a guard fell in the moat. Dirk turns around, he helps the guy out of the moat, or out of the ice, and then they lived happily ever after, and they understood each other better after that, and it was really beautiful. Actually, what happened is he was recaptured and they burned him at the stake. So, I mean, these things are real, you guys. I really wish I could tell you that if you're a good neighbor, everybody's going to recognize how good you are and all your relationships are going to be great and everything will be clear to you, what you're supposed to be doing and what you're not supposed to be doing. But Jesus didn't tell easy stories. He didn't tell fairy tales. He told hard stories that were complicated. And so I want to honor that. I want to encourage you to help your neighbor out of that icy water. But I also want to warn you that he might not exactly appreciate that gesture in the ways that you think he should. If you're going to have an expectation that when you engage your neighbor in the ways that God is calling you, that it's all going to feel good, you're probably going to be disappointed. And that's important to point out. So I'm going to have some people come up. I'm going to have a little conversation. But as they're coming, I just want to throw this out here because I think this parable kind of demands it in the context that we're in right now. Okay? You see, if you're on social media or if you're live at all, you see some attitudes towards refugees, illegal immigrants, Muslims, other marginalized groups that I think are pretty primarily driven by fear, right? I think most of those fears are unfounded, but I want to be able to grant people their fear. Like, okay, you're afraid. And the truth is, as Christians, fear doesn't get to drive or control what we do, right? And so before we start this conversation, I want to challenge you to think about what's going on in our world right now in light of what this parable demands of us. And I'll just leave that with you. So I asked these folks to come and share a story, and then we're going to have a little conversation about it, because when I was thinking about the story of the Good Samaritan, this is a story that came to mind for me, and they agreed to share it. So, Peter, you want to start? So I was going to follow up with some questions, but I think they covered it pretty well. And mostly why I had them come up here is because I think a lot of helping stories are like this. We want them to be neat. We want to, you know, have it be real clear cut. We want to be done when we're done. And these are actually the more realistic stories of helping. They can be very ambiguous. They can be very difficult. They can bring up a lot of questions. And I think it's important to share our stories like this with one another and help one another. Like, one of the things I really loved about this story is it wasn't Peter doing everything himself. Like, he recognized, hey, I need some help, and people came and helped. And so this is how I think it's supposed to look. And I think we're supposed to help each other. And I'm going to invite the thank you guys so much for doing that. I'm going to invite the worship team back up.